Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 38 of Business Therapy, a show about helping real professionals solve real business problems. Every week, we invite a guest onto the show, in this case, two guests, to help them guide through the normal pains and setbacks of working through their career. Using a mindfulness-first approach, we help our guests find conscious solutions and help give them the tools to take on challenges that inevitably pop up during the ups and downs of business. I'm Sam Droshak, and as always, I'm here with Jonathan Adams. Today on the show, we have Eli and Grace. Welcome, guys.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit more about yourself and your business and how we can help you today?
Sure. Yeah, I'll start. My name is Grace. I am one of the co-founders of Absurd Snacks. We created an allergy-friendly snack company while we were students at the University of Richmond. We were lucky enough to be part of an inaugural program called Benchtop Innovations that enabled us to create a packaged food product in about 6 months. So in the fall semester, we were broken up into four very distinct groups. Each group had their own idea, their own branding idea in mind, recipes. And we iterated in the kitchen for about 8 weeks before we competed at a bake-off at the end of the semester. We were graded on a panel of judges on a certain criteria, including product market fit, strategy, how interesting the idea was, if there was scalability, and marketing capabilities. And ultimately, this bean-based snack, which is now Absurd Snacks, was chosen as the winner. And then for the rest of the school year, the entire class worked on it full-time together. I was elected as CEO, and I elected Eli over here for head of operations. And we were coming up on graduation and we were really loving it. We figured why not just jump full, like 2 feet in, just give it a go for however long it takes for us to get to a point where we're really satisfied with like this whole idea that we started and we've been loving it. We officially launched on March 21st and we're selling in and around Richmond, Virginia and about 25 retailers, natural grocers, cafes, coffee shops, as well as selling online. DSC via our website, and we just got off the waitlist on Fair, so it's exciting.
Awesome. Well, congratulations first on the whole experience. It sounds like you guys worked really hard, and I just like to say it's always super impressive to see people jumping straight into their professional career with having their own business. I think it's a great experience, so really happy to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the class had to take you from ideation all the way through to sales.
Yeah, so we did the whole nine in about 6 months.
Amazing. Yeah. Sorry, Eli, are you going to say something?
I was just going to kind of tack on to what Sam was saying and say, like, it has been an incredible experience. Being able to have that opportunity, Grace and I kind of just felt like we'd be doing ourselves a disservice by not going full time with it, and it's not even work to us because we have so much fun. So every day is definitely a new adventure, but it's all exciting. So
yeah, that's great. And it's always easy to stay mindful with your work when it's fun. That's always the right phase. So I guess that's a good segue into what brought you onto the show today. What are you guys feeling? What can we help you with here on Business Therapy?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to have this conversation. Kind of because of the timeline and just the nature of our program at school, we didn't have a lot of time to be super intentional and deliberate and consider a lot of choices for a lot of our like structural and core foundation pieces to our company. So one piece of that is marketing, and another is our actual production. So we were set up with a manufacturer local to Richmond where we went to school. And it was great for the time being, but as we scale, we realized that we need a new partner to help us kind of scale our production. So now we're in the process of searching new manufacturing options. And we've been considering small scale, larger scale, as well as actually manufacturing ourselves. And in the process, we're trying to kind of develop our recipes. And so that's the main issue that we've been dealing with is how we can reconcile our manufacturing process, really create a rock solid supply chain and use that moving forward to create a longer term relationship.
Was there a reason you chose allergen free food as the target? Because it sounded like it could have been any food item.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the inspiration for the allergen-free snack actually came from one of our classmates. His name is Dan. He was actually in my group in the fall when we were in those small little cohorts. And he has a severe peanut and tree nut allergy. And he actually came into class every single Tuesday, Thursday with the same granola bar by 88 acres. And when we were broken up into these groups, we're trying to figure out like, okay, there's a million things we could do. Like, how do we find one? And he was like, well, I mean, like I have a really hard time finding safe snacks that are high in protein, low in sugar, interesting, that I want to eat every day. He's like, I wish there was just more options for me. And that kind of got the wheels turning. And we figured, you know, after we did our due diligence, we walked the aisles in Publix for hours, Wegmans, Whole Foods. And we came to the conclusion that like, yeah, it is tough for people with allergies to really like enjoy these like higher quality snacks that are nutritious, that'll keep them full. And I had been roasting chickpeas in my oven for years. One of my friends from high school, I played volleyball in high school, and we'd go to these tournaments and her mom would bring these like really crunchy roasted chickpeas. And since then I'd always been making them. And so that, you know, that was brought up again with that opportunity. And I was like, oh, let's just try like a trail mix. Like that's something that would be really interesting. Obviously it's exclusive to people who don't have peanut tree nut allergies. And that's sort of where the inspiration came from. We just started throwing stuff together in a bowl and then roasting it. And it turned out to be pretty good. So that's where inspiration comes from.
I particularly love your mission because I have a daughter who grew up with a tree nut allergy, sesame and eggs. And the default is always to eat really bad food because you're already in a position that you have to do without and watch everybody else. Like you were saying, you know, eat other things while you eat your same 88 granola bar or whatever, whatever it is. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, we're really happy to do it. And it's been like life-changing for some of our friends and family who also have nut allergies in specific. But what's also great about our mix is not only is it interesting and different, but we're also like super powered by plant protein. So we have our chickpeas, fava beans, and green peas that pack a punch of protein. It's very low in sugar, and it just happens to be vegan as well. So it really hits a lot of the pain points that we're seeing in the industry.
Right. And, oh, Sam, you're going to say?
I was just going to follow up with the asking about the supply chain issue. So Eli had started to say you guys wanted to reconfigure, reorient a little bit, and you really wanted to get a rock solid supply chain as you scale. So I guess my follow-up question would be, what is making you move from your current manufacturer, or what's causing you to feel like you can't scale using your current supply chain, just to establish what the problem is right now?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there are two main problems. One, to be fully transparent, we recently found out that our manufacturer is closing their packing facility. So they're actually no longer going to be able to produce for us come the end of the summer. We have been relying on our inventory on hand right now, and we have enough stock to kind of last us the next month or two. So we've just been pushing that and keeping that inventory. The second problem is they were just a couple of guys in a kitchen and they had no machinery to automate the process. So it's not a very scalable process. They're making it by hand in 50 pound batches. So for every 50 pound batch, we'd get about 72 10 ounce bags. And long-term, that's just not necessarily sustainable. As we start to get into bigger box retailers and pilot with bigger chain stores, and then hopefully do a regional launch later this fall with one of those partners, we would need much higher volumes. So in order to achieve that, we would need a facility that has the right equipment, the right machinery, as well as the right staff that's equipped to do that.
Mm-hmm. So your manufacturer closing down, I guess that's a problem, or that's a good kick in the pants to start changing the supply chain.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually found out through a third party, which was difficult to hear, but we're plugging along.
Yeah, I think Eli also brings up a good point about scalability, which is so important, obviously, as we're in this gig to grow. Like that's our main goal, is to, you know, bring absurd snacks to everyone's door. And that's the only way that we'd be able to do that. But we're also in this point now where like we're fresh out of school. We don't have a ton of industry experience. And so we're really looking for a manufacturing partner that is going to sort of teach us the ropes and want to grow with us. and really create those foundational relationships that will only serve us well as we continue to scale. And so I think, you know, making sure that we have really great quality partners that want to see our success as much as theirs is top priority for us. And we're being very transparent with those conversations that we have with people. And it seems to be really well received. So we're hopeful for sure.
Do you know why they're closing down the manufacturer?
Yeah, it was, so they focus on, they kind of have three business models and it got a little out of hand. So they have these food halls where they bring in local businesses to promote their product and they can use the kitchens at their facilities to produce the goods, but then sell it through this common food hall. And then they also have a warehousing space. They also have the bottling and packing facility. And then they also have the ghost kitchens where businesses can just rent out kitchen space. So I guess really four different business models. And yeah, they just decided that this, the bottling and packing facility was not being utilized well enough and not making them enough money. So they decided to focus their efforts elsewhere.
I'll come back to it a little bit, but just the general challenge in this area of finding a reliable and sustainable manufacturing facility, it's not uncommon. But your need to scale, is that a present problem? Do you have orders that are not going to go filled, or where are you with the big box retailers?
Yeah, so we've been in talks with a few. We did have a meeting in DC with Whole Foods a few months ago, and they had expressed interest in kind of a fall launch. And then we ended up applying for their, and they have this inaugural pilot accelerator program for local and emerging brands. So that was an opportunity that we were super excited about because their values perfectly align with ours. We're pushing to be more sustainable, pushed towards a market of consumers who are conscious about what they're putting in their bodies. And this local and emerging brands accelerator program was an opportunity for us to put our brand and product in front of the eyes of their customers. And so we were really excited about that. We are actually finalists and still waiting to hear back. So we're really hoping on that one. We were also a part of the NOSH Pitch Slam, which is a pitch competition that was held in New York. And we were finalists there as well. And we met a lot of amazing connections that can hopefully help us get into some of the other chains come in the future. We also have a couple of unique opportunities. So the admissions department at our university wants to purchase a significant amount of smaller single serve packs for people that come through their admissions, and especially the business students, in order to kind of show them you could be a part of this amazing course that, you know, you could bring a product to life. And we also have been speaking to like the A10 and other conferences, as well as, you know, sporting events, in order to sponsor them. So we're trying to rack up as many statements of work and POs up front so we could justify that production, but we're definitely on our way there.
But you don't have, like, currently you don't have them, like, you know, so there isn't a known runway here for when the scaling will be a problem.
Yeah, so we have a handful of POs that would justify, like, we would need product by September, more in different sizes, and that we're offering right now. But as you can imagine, like, the co-man search, we're now in week 10 of our co-man search, and it's we're successful in it, but it will take a long time for us to officially, like, sign docs and get all that in place. And so we just want to be ready. And so it's Eli and myself, and we have a third partner. Her name is Maeve, and she runs marketing. So we do have, you know, enough hands that, like, Eli generally spearheads all the operational co-man search aspects. I'm more on the sales side. So we are able to rack up POs and prospect while also doing the co-man search. So we're trying to, I mean, in a perfect world, everything would be aligned so that when we're ready to scale, we're like, can just hit the go button. We're trying our best there for sure.
And before we continue to get more tactical, let me pause and ask, how are you guys feeling right now? Because one thing I want to broach is, this is the first real existential threat, it sounds like, to the business, in a way, where you have part of your core operation that you know is no longer going to be functional. And I'm phrasing it this way because I think this is going to be part of a greater theme that this is going to happen a lot, especially when you're a young business and you're fragile to the market sort of fluctuations. Large contracts could come and go. The beginning is where, counterintuitively, when you have the least experience, you tend to get thrown the hardest curveballs. So we're going to talk about this use case of finding this new manufacturer. But really, this, what we're talking about is you've got a real major threat to the business. And before we dive in further, I guess, how are you feeling right now and why?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we've done a pretty good job of staying level-headed. We want to put the values of the business as first priority, and we want to kind of stand with that. So we've had a lot of very tempting options where there are manufacturers that can offer us production as soon as we need them at a decent rate, but they're not allergen free. And just having to say no to that is very difficult. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're considering our customer and we're centering our whole business around the customer. And we actually just finished a 6-week incubation program that kind of centered around customer discovery. And so we were able to kind of confirm a lot of those assumptions about our target market. And just having those confirmations and seeing how much the customer really appreciates the problem that we're filling in the market and seeing that this really could fill a gap in stores and on the shelves, I think it helps us to keep trudging along. I would say there are definitely a lot of moving pieces. So from like a bigger picture, it's definitely a little overwhelming, but you just keep plugging along, keep building relationships. And so far there have been so many doors that have been opened and so many opportunities to consider that it's exciting. It is nerve-wracking, but it's exciting.
So let me just, and not to harp on it, but you gave a lot about what you're doing. How do you feel, Eli? And then we'll go to Grace. So it is nerve-wracking, but how is it making you feel personally? Like, what's going on in your body right now? Do you wake up every day and you're anxious? Are you feeling like you've got it under control? Like, what is the feelings going on with you right now?
Yeah, I mean, timeline-wise, I don't think we're at a point where I'm like, have a wrench in my chest about it yet, but I definitely go to bed thinking about the options and then wake up thinking about the options. And when I haven't heard back from a certain prospective partner in X amount of days, it really starts to get to me. So I would say we're not at a point yet where it's like extremely like a big weight on my chest, but it's definitely something that I'm thinking about all day long.
Grace, how are you feeling?
Yeah, my feelings, I think, are pretty similar. It's definitely nerve-wracking to think like, okay, come September, we really need to have like a solidified lead as far as who our next partner is going to be in this. But I think Eli makes a good point. Like, I mean, you wake up and we're just on that entrepreneurship like grind all day long. And it's sometimes you kind of try not to worry about like the huge pieces that are missing from your business because there's so many other things that we're doing. But ultimately, I mean, it's been top priority since the day we graduated because we knew that we were going to move on anyways away from this manufacturer and from a quality perspective. But the fact that, you know, it's now or never sort of deal, it does have a bit of a weight. But I guess ask us in a month and we might have a different answer. But so far, yeah, we're doing everything that we can to meet that sort of deadline that we've set for ourselves. And that's the best that we can do. So we're feeling okay about it.
And what's the worst that can happen? So come September, if you don't find this manufacturer, what's the, like, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, I mean, in our business, you never want to be out of stock. And that's the scariest part. We don't have any money coming through. What's the point of having a business? So that would be worst case scenario. I mean, we built tremendous relationships with our current retail partners. And the last thing we want to do is have their shelves be empty. The thought of getting booted off their shelf is really scary because we've worked so hard the past 6 months to build those relationships. And, you know, they love the product, our community loves the product. And the last thing we want to do is to be gone for a few months. And just from a business perspective too, that doesn't look too great.
So the last thing, it's funny, I just want to touch on this for a minute. You said the last thing you want to do is stop your revenue flow and be off the shelves. But is that really the last thing you guys would want to do? And I don't ask that to be a leading question, but you know, you talk about your community, and it's in these times of urgency where before we think about what to do, I think it's really important, Jonathan's question about what is the worst thing that could happen, because I can think of worse things that can happen for a company that's value-based than to lose money for a while. So I want to reflect on that for a second, because I think Eli started to touch on it, but what is the worst thing that could happen to your business? I think you could think of something worse than revenue loss for a bit.
I think a loss of integrity would be pretty bad. The main pillar of our business is allergy friendly. We want to make sure that the products that we're feeding people are safe. That's the whole point of what we're doing. I'm signing on with the wrong partner would be horrible. If we're not keeping ourselves accountable to those, like Eli said, like it's tempting to, you know, sign on with people who are not allergen free and just have workarounds, but ultimately, like, this is something that's so important to us. And so I think that would be worst case scenario, I suppose, is losing that core pillar of our business.
And is it a possibility, could you imagine a scenario where you lost or burned some of the current relationships, but then had a much bigger opportunity that was far more impactful to overall sales?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a few co-mans that we're exploring, and they're not necessarily on the East Coast. And so that just poses a ton of logistical problems. I mean, as you can imagine, shipping costs are anywhere from $600 to $700 a pallet. And that's on a small business, that's incredibly expensive. And so, you know, if we have to pick up and go out to the West Coast for manufacturing, it's going to be difficult to maintain our independent grocers here in Richmond. And so there is a possibility that, like, we might have to not start from scratch, but we might have to prospect really heavily in another area to mitigate major costs of shipping. And we don't want to do that, but if we have to, you know, move manufacturing in order to keep that integrity of our business, it might be worthwhile.
And I meant more in terms of the worst thing that can happen. So come September, like, you're just looking at, like, worst case scenarios or the things that keep you up at night. There is a scenario where you lose revenue for a period of time, or you lose certain relationships, but there are even better relationships, not better, but like more growth opportunities that could come along. So just in terms of orienting yourself to, you know, like, worst case scenario, or, you know, what the problem is. Sometimes we think something is very bad, and then a new opportunity presents itself even stronger. So just being open to it, you know, to different possibilities. But of course, you don't want to lose current.
Yeah, I from a revenue perspective, I don't think it'd be the worst thing ever. But from a brand integrity perspective, like Grace was saying, I think we've built such a community around our brand in Richmond, especially because our roots are in Richmond. And people really love the story of how we came up with the business and what the inspiration was and kind of how we got our footing. And it's just this local foodie town that really appreciates what we've been able to do. And we want to mimic that strategy in other markets, but keeping our roots in Richmond is, like, very important to us and very important to our brand. So it would be difficult, not only from a logistics perspective, but also it would just, you know, it would be difficult for us to say goodbye to our roots. Mm-hmm. So we want to make every effort, even if it means losing a little bit of money and having to pay for the shipping to get it back to Richmond. I think it would mean a lot to us to be able to keep our roots and show the appreciation to the community.
And that's the exact point I was trying to get to, is the loss of revenue is not your, like, to Sam's point, that's like you're starting to prioritize, you know, what the value stream is, so that way you can, or your value system is, so you can prioritize the problem and how you're orienting it.
Yeah.
And this is where I was going with it, which is, if you have an existential threat to the business, well, let me ask one more abstract question, and then I promise I'll try to start anchoring us down to something more practical for you. What is the business, because you're talking about, you know, we're in our first real existential threat to the business, like we talked about, but what is the business? You're talking about it in terms of how I would expect, you know, people who have been trained in classical business to think about it, your revenue streams, your profit, your brand. But what is it in the real world, really? If you could point to your business and say, what is it just revenue? Is it just something that you guys do on paper? What is your business? What is actually being threatened at this time?
Yeah, I mean, we've built our business on this community orientation. So I think it's more so the community that we built around it and the people that we're serving more so than a business, if that makes sense.
It does. What else? That's the thing, because the tactical here is when you have these big challenges, you guys as founders and your third founder also, the first thing you have to decide when you're navigating these challenges is what is the problem? What is threatened? What is the priority? Like, if you think about it that way, because if you can't articulate that and you can't reach, then you're already going to start being in a situation where any solution you come up with is going to be tenuous. And if you don't know what's at threat, then how are you going to navigate it? So one of the first things I think we need to talk about as founders is, what are you trying to protect? Is it your revenue stream? Is it your current community in the Richmond area? Is it the integrity and the and sort of the intention of the product itself? That's something we have to be very clear on, because if you can't be clear on that, and I can't put you in three different rooms individually and you can't speak to that, then I think your ability to come up with a strategy to address the problem is going to be impossible. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And part of me wants to say, you know, we're trying to protect all of them because they all matter to us. But at the same time, I realize that you have to dial in and like put your best foot forward and really stick to what's core to the business.
And how would you answer Sam's question in terms of what it is? What's your purpose? Why does the company exist?
Yeah, definitely the purpose, and we exist to serve people with food allergies. So I think the integrity of the product is more important than any other part of our business.
And what's the community aspect? I mean, I understand the local community in Richmond, but a local community of people who want to eat allergy-free food, people that like your brand, like what's the...
Yeah, as of recent, I mean, we've done this customer discovery program with the Startup Virginia, where we've been able to interview about 25 people, people with nut allergies and people in our community in general. And the people that we are serving are people with nut allergies. Ideally, we'd be an allergen-free brand eventually when we get into, an allergen-free facility that's like certified, have all the assurances there. But the community that we're building is becoming more accessible to people with nut allergies, and making it fun, exciting, something that they can relate to and be a part of. Because that's where our initial inspiration came from with our friend Dan.
Yeah. And in that, this is the business, right? So when you start to get into this urgency because you're growing and you want more revenue and you feel like the business is threatened because your revenue is threatened, or you might have to contract, or you can't keep forward momentum, this is where stress starts to really seep in. And it's easy to forget what you just said, which is the company is in the real world a collection of people with common goal. You and your founders, and you want to serve people who are looking for allergen-free snacks. As long as you can do that, the company isn't. So that's one thing that, you know, I would really ask you guys to internalize, because your business is not really a threat as long as Grace can still roast cheese. And that's something that we have to think about. Because your business is going to go through, especially in the beginning, a lot of twists and turns, and you have to make, you can't lose track in the shuffle of revenue, or you're chasing the next big thing. It's going to be very difficult to maintain course.
Yeah. One thing that we've heard from a lot of our mentors that's been really humbling advice is kind of to make, or just do your best not to make promises that you won't be able to keep. And I think that kind of rings the same bell in the sense that we want to, you know, we want to keep accessing these same channels, but we don't necessarily have to scale to a certain amount if it, you know, threatens our main value here of putting these snacks in front of the people who rely on us.
But at the end of the day, it's allergy-free food to the most amount of people possible. Like, in other words, you want to help as many people who have this problem as possible.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's the end goal. Well,
I mean, this is because that's critical, because you're the community, which I think is a wonderful aspect, is that's where you started, and that's all your, you know, that's the world you know. That's safe. But I'm trying to understand the community relative to your overall purpose. So like if you could serve, if the community stays strong, you know, and that stays strong, wonderful. But where does the community fit in relative to serving the maximum amount of people who have this problem?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I guess from our perspective, I don't know if you're familiar with the company Midday Squares, but they do a tremendous job of being super present on social media across all their channels, and they make their consumers feel part of the brand. And that's where the community orientation that we're talking about, like we're starting on a micro level, like in our hometown, Richmond, Virginia, and around, like, you know, the DMV area. That's the community that we're speaking on currently. But as we continue to grow and scale, we want to keep that small brand feel while also scaling and reaching more people and opening more doors. And I think, you know, replicating the Midday Squares, how they run their business, I feel like I'm part of the family, and I'm just like on LinkedIn scrolling because they have an awesome product and they have awesome people, and they really take you along for the journey. And so that's the model that we're building, the community aspect on a larger scale. That's the ultimate end goal.
But still a means to an end.
Yeah.
So in other words, like the way it feels, like the aspect of that, because you're also, you're questioning different customers, like what they like, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's easy, like if you asked enough customers who only focused on X allergy, but not Y allergy, it's possible then you can start thinking, oh, we should shift. But sure. But the danger there is that you still want to know what it is that gets you excited in the morning, what it is that, you know, makes you excited to be doing the work that you're doing. And so we've seen a lot of companies that make major pivots, and they're very good for revenue and they're very good for growth, but not necessarily for the reason that they started the business.
Right.
So that's why I'm trying to tease apart the idea of things that are means to an end, or things that there's a good feeling about, or things that you like to mimic, versus isolating what's your differentiator, what it is that, you know, your particular company is looking to achieve, because then, like, back to the original question, what do you do about manufacturing? If you're in the trail mix business, you know, then maybe you have one answer. But if you're in the allergy free food business, and let's say the manufacturing is the biggest problem, well, then that's something that you might consider getting into even more, or be part of your strategic plan versus seeing it as a means to an end to do your trail mix for your current orders. So it's like, what problem are you trying to solve, and what problem is going to keep you excited? Because you are going to lose customers at some point. You know, I don't want to say that, but like something will happen. You will, like Sam said, you'll have a lot of existential crises. And there are different things that will work out and things that won't work out, but you want to be, what's your North Star? And what's,
right,
again, what's keeping you excited? And then you start seeing, okay, some of the things that I'm really wedded to right now may or may not be part of what my journey has to be.
Sure. Because
you won't be able to have every aspect of what exists today moving forward with you every single day.
Yeah. Well, I guess going off of that, I would say trail mix is not really our end goal. We want to expand this product line and create new options and creative options using kind of underutilized ingredients that are nutrient dense, but also allergen free. and create more possibilities and expand the horizons of allergen-free eaters. And whether that rubs off on other people or not, I'm sure it will, but it's really about targeting those consumers and giving them more options to make them feel like they have a spot in the snack aisle. Because when you one thing we found from a lot of our interviews is when you're walking down the aisle, it's all just chip after chip after chip and pretzel after pretzel, and none of them really consider the allergen-free eaters. Almost all of them have the disclaimers on the backs saying, you know, this was made in a facility with XXX, or this was produced on the same equipment. And those things are like big turnoffs. And quite frankly, a lot of people just don't want to take the chance. So that is like the core of having those certifications and being able to certify, like, this is for you, this is for everyone. And yeah, but also just kind of creating more options and expanding that. Space.
Now that's an elevator pitch. So that's because that's inspirational. And I think that if you could retain the core of what was just said now, you'll avoid losing your way where, let's say, the university wants you to change your packaging to, you know, for certain other branding. And then, oh, you see this great idea for branding and how you could do your packaging. And then you go really deep down a rabbit hole of focusing on this advertising and, or, you know, specific branding. But, and then suddenly all these administrative things don't feel so good anymore. It's because you forget, okay, this was a means to an end. This wasn't, you know, necessarily our end. And so at all your choices, you want to be thinking about it that way.
Yeah.
In concert with what you just said.
And also just to remind you what you said a few minutes ago, and this is why this topic is so important. You'd mentioned, you had been talking to manufacturers who weren't allergen free. And part of your stress was you felt bad that you had to turn them down, or like that you feel upset. That's like saying, I felt bad turning away the enemy. That's like the complete enemy to your mission.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
You gotta hold tight here first, because it doesn't matter what kind of advice we give you. If you lose your compass direction on what the company is, it's going to be very hard to not be stressed out. Because if you start to get so pressured, you feel like getting in bed with the enemy, so to speak, then you've already lost your way. Like, that should be a happy thing for you to do, to be like, no, I'm sorry, we're not dealing with people who aren't allergen free, because that's what makes us happy. If you lose that, then you're starting to stumble, because that means you're chasing something else. You're chasing the next big deal, you're chasing revenue, and that will lead your company into the ground. That's the true existential crisis. Everything else beyond that is easy, even if it feels hard at times.
Yeah.
It cuts down significantly on your choices. So you don't actually, you're not making bad choices, or, you know, you don't have to worry about them because they're not a choice. Because otherwise, if your purpose ceases, then the company ceases. It doesn't matter what the books say.
Right.
Unless the books are all that matters, you know, and even that's that's a tough one to chase through the growth.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. And now I feel that we've gotten that small point out of the way. Just kidding. That's obviously, I think, the biggest point. But I do want to give you guys some tactical advice, because what you're dealing with, especially as young business owners, is extremely overwhelming. And I think the notion that, okay, we need to plan for growth, we need to stabilize our current, and like you start to talk about, well, I could do West Coast, East Coast. The reason that these things get overwhelming is because you start moving into the realm of possibility and the realm of infinite possibility and infinite variation, and you lose track of being present. And this is the core of mindful business decision-making, which is remaining in the present as a business is super critical to not get drowned, like the kind of feeling that you're describing that we see with so many entrepreneurs, which is the idea is you need to really wake up, and before you start really getting lost in the infinity of what could happen to you, you need to know what is happening to you right now. Who are your current clients? What is your current inventory? What is the path of least resistance to continue to satisfy your priorities, maintain your integrity? How do you do that? Could be getting back in the kitchen yourself, or engaging your community to get in the kitchen with you while you get through this phase. There's infinite solutions to problems, but you cannot solve a problem that doesn't exist. And I cannot emphasize that enough. You cannot work on a problem of fulfilling contracts you don't have. And you cannot work on a problem of finding a partner that you don't have requirements for. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, you've got big ideas and the strategy mindset, and it's intoxicating. The idea of a strategic mindset can be addictive, but you really need to collapse your thinking back into the moment right now and know what is the next step you have to take to continue to fulfill your purpose. Because if you let it go beyond that, then that feeling of overwhelming steps in, and then it's hard to have any sort of practical conversation. Does that resonate with what I'm saying with you both?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious then, if we get an opportunity like a sports conference that wants to supply our snacks because they really love our story, but not necessarily because they have a bunch of allergen-free eaters coming into their venues. Is that something that we should prioritize engaging with? Like, it's a great account and it's great exposure for the brand, but it's not necessarily perfectly aligned with our value and like the problem we're trying to solve. So that is more of like us, I feel like, chasing revenue and chasing a bigger sales stream rather than trying to nail down our target customer.
I feel like you answered your own question, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, to date, we've been chasing those because we feel like they're great accounts and will give us great exposure. And we can still, you know, keep our messaging to being allergy free. And we could still have that on our packaging to make sure it's well known and easy to understand. Like, when you see our package on the shelf, we want you to instantly know that it's allergy free. But for the exposure, we've still been engaging. So,
and I think the question is there a person in that scenario that is the person that you're trying to help? Is there someone who's looking for healthy food in the sports industry, you know, who otherwise will look at that sea of products and not see one that means, you know, resonates with them? Like, you know, it's not a problem to have a revenue generating opportunity. That's good. But if it won't help your particular target person that is underserved right now, then that's a problem. But if it will, I don't know that it's a conflict.
Yeah. And it's like, my answer was a little, it made it seem like it was black and white. I agree with Jonathan. It's not black and white. There's a concept, one of my favorite concepts, and it's actually from Bain's book, The Ultimate Question 2.0. There's this concept that there's good profit and there's bad profit. Have you heard of this? So if it's good profit, it's like Jonathan's saying, every snack that reaches somebody who you want to serve and every dollar of revenue that turns into profit that aligns with your mission is good profit. And that's what helps a business grow organically and is sustainable. Bad profit would be if you sign up in a deal that you might not be touching your market, but you're trading that misalignment for exposure, for increased sales. That's not something that you can grow because it actually starts to move you away from your alignment, your values. So like Jonathan was saying, in a deal like the one you're talking about, you're spending time chasing it and you're creating narratives for why it's a good fit. You have missed. Is it a good fit? And what percentage of that deal is actually going to just be revenue generating? That's just there for people who are looking for snacks in the moment. And what is going to actually help with your organic growth, building your community, and connecting with the people that you wanted to serve? And I think that needs to be the answer. And if it's the majority of it is not aligned with your mission, or it's just a revenue play, then you've got to decide what that means, because your company is defined by its actions. And if more you dilute your brand integrity and your value integrity, then the harder it is for your business to stay together over time.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Didn't necessarily sound like if one of the potato chip manufacturers want to use your branding because it caught on and, you know, was selling well in Richmond. You know, I don't, like, that sounds like definitely chasing something that would hurt your integrity. It's purely in each situation, where's the community? But I want to get back to another point about what started this, is that your manufacturer is closing down. It's very important you remember this lesson, because I think, again, in businesses, we're always thinking that if only X happens, then we're safe, and then X problem is gone. And it's never gone, because it's possible you find another manufacturer, and then that you hear that they're closing down, you know, like 6 months later or something like that. In other words, and that's what I was trying to get at, that there's going to be ups and downs, but at every day when you wake up, are the things that you're doing and the decision you're making helping that person who otherwise goes down the aisle and sees nothing that's there for them? Mm-hmm. And as long as that's all your action is driven by that, and you let go of everything, you can let go of everything else, then it doesn't necessarily get easier, but it definitely will feel less like work and administration and more like what kept the energy of the company to start you off.
Right.
Yeah. You don't have to solve the problem for how you're going to grow. That's one thing I want to give you guys, which is growth and profitability is a byproduct of being a healthy business that's community centric. If you're serving your community, you know, I'm not saying you're never going to have to put any effort to sales. I know, Grace, that you're focusing on sales. You have to call the people and you have to get into the programs, and you guys are doing a great job. But the actual growth of the company sustainably will come as a byproduct of being conscious and focusing on the present, the things in front of you in the present, getting the people who are already buying your customer, keeping them alive. Like if you start to spend time, forecasting for all this major sales and getting these big manufacturers at the expense of the things that you've already worked on and the community you have right now, it's going to be a pattern that's going to end up having negative impacts on the company. Mm. So, you know, I think the short answer to the one that you posed in the beginning of the episode is, what do we do on this manufacturer search? If it were me, and I'm just giving you straight tactical advice, I would condense your search. I would align on the problem you have right now, not the problem of potential growth opportunity that you're missing, because that's an abstract, that's a strategic forecasting. But the current sales that you do have, the current community you are serving, what is the most efficient, simplest solution to serve them? And again, don't be afraid to get back in the kitchen. That may seem like a step backwards, but you've got to stabilize your core. You can't address a problem that hasn't materialized yet. You can continue to sell and do all these things, but when you're looking for the solution that is supposed to align with an event that's going to happen in the future, that's what causes the tension. That's what causes stress. So, but by focusing on your mission of keeping an allergen free, by focusing on servicing the people that you already have a commitment to, that should be your number one priority, at least in my opinion. And hopefully that'll help keep you grounded. And then you can take this company iteratively one step at a time. And it should also make it more manageable, because making it more manageable makes it more realistic. Mm-hmm. And now, if you're not being realistic, that's where the stress is hitting you every day.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'll just shade that a little bit in terms of there is the danger, because you started with this community, that you start going very, very deep in one direction to serve that community at the expense of maybe a longer term vision. So if the longer term vision is, like I said, helping as many people as possible, you can get into something that becomes so focused and so relevant only in Richmond that you start curtailing your ability to do it more sustainably. Right. So, I hear some difference in Eli and Grace in your answers. So it's very, very important that you are very aligned on what it is. So I think the community is great. And I do think I agree with Sam that you want to, you know, you don't want to abandon your existing customers, but we see this all the time in not just the food area, but in multiple businesses where you start out with a launch customer, or you start out with some feedback that drives you into something very specific, and it could be the packaging, it could be everything. And that's where you kind of start losing your way and say, is this what I want to do? Or you say, this is all I want to do, you know, and this, that's great. And then you don't have to worry about scaling and all the traditional things that you think you're supposed to worry about, because you're living the dream, you know, be happy with that success. But you really need to make that, like, what is it that, you know, viscerally that's giving the company energy? And as long as you can define that, you know, all three of you, like Sam said, if you were in different rooms, then a lot of these choices are, they're much less worrisome.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know we've been throwing you guys a lot. How are you feeling right now? Are you processing?
Definitely, yeah. Processing. The wheels are turning.
No, I do still feel good though. Like it's exciting for me. I think we're early on, and one thing that's been really challenging for us is being thrown into this space where everyone is so supportive. It was almost like, it's very shocking how everybody just wants to help, and we've been getting thrown opportunities and new possibilities every day. And while that's amazing and we're so thankful for all those opportunities, to the points that we've talked about today, we need to stay very dialed in on, you know, what our goal is and where we want this to be 6 months from now, a year from now, even 5 years from now. Because if we, like you were saying, Jonathan, if we keep that North Star, it'll make it a lot easier for us to, you know, stay dialed in on where we want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely seconding that. And I think Eli brings up a good point too, with just, there's a ton of opportunities. And I think part of us is we're naturally interested in all of them, and we want to give all of them like an equal chance to sort of solidify like a real like sales trajectory or opportunity there. But it is important that we need to take a step back and really just make sure we're all on the same page and keep dialed into what our mission is, because ultimately I think that's going to be the generator for long-term, like our long-term growth strategy, which is really, really important.
And I wouldn't even necessarily think of it as the growth strategy is just being able to see the opportunities that are mm-hmm. coming your way. Because if you're open to what it is, you know, that you're trying to serve, then you might see something like the manufacturing as, either Sam said, we go back to the kitchen because we're so happy with the market we're serving right now, and we could efficiently do that for this in this moment. Or maybe you start learning new things about, you know, the manufacturing process and, you know, doubling down on that. I mean, there's definitely a very big shortage out there of that work. So, and then suddenly it's not just a tactical problem, but it becomes a something that you can, like I said, see as opportunity. So how are you both feeling now? We've gone through some, you know, the better part of a session. I know that you don't have the answer to, you know, which facility to, you know, to find specifically, but have we given you some things to think about, or some things to calm some of that energy right now?
Yeah. Well, while the decision may not be made, I feel like the decision will be easier because we know what our priorities are and we know what we need to weigh with the most consideration. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Eli and I were actually on the phone yesterday, and we were both saying we're going to have to kick someone to the curb. Like, it just has to happen sooner or later. So this is definitely like the push that we needed, and sort of creates like that fire under our butt. Like, we have to do it. So, but yeah, definitely appreciate you guys' insight. And it's always nice to have like an outside perspective, sort of do a deep dive on our issues. So appreciate you guys' time.
Excellent. Sam, you want to close this out?
Sure. We really appreciate having you on the show. And I just want all the listeners to know that if you have any sort of issues you want to bring on the show, we'd love to have you. Love your engagement. So Eli and Grace, we send you back out, and hopefully we've helped you in your mission. But other than that, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.